The following programming is sponsored by Bishop Mary Enterprises, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Real. Real. Relaxed. Relaxed. But relevant. But relevant. She's an absolute professional with a homegirl feel. Welcome to the Bishop Mary Show with Bishop Mary Foy Palmer, where she will discuss both religious and secular topics with various guests from all walks of life. So thanks for tuning in to the Bishop Mary Show. And now, here's Bishop Mary.
And top of the morning to you. Good morning. Good morning. We are excited you are here. And I want to start off our set with this amazing song.
Times when I should have died, you stood right by my side. You're amazing. Lost in a world of sin, and pulled me in. With you, I'm on a win. You're amazing. Looking back over, is that anybody's testimony tonight? There were times I should have died.
Right by my side.
The Lord is.
You're amazing.
Anybody know
Yes. Amazing by Kenny Lewis, song that I kind of fell in love with over this Easter holiday weekend. I'm so blessed. Good Friday to those of you who are celebrating that. The time that Jesus was on the cross. I want to give a special shout out and a thank you to Pastor Darren McKinney for inviting me to share the sixth word on Good Friday at the Bright Hope Baptist Church in North Philadelphia, located at 12th and Cecil B. Moore. Oh my gosh, I was there with some dynamic people, Bishop Keith Reed, Pastor Marshall Mitchell, Pastor James Henry H. James Buck, and Pastor Corey Johnson, and Pastor Herb Les III, and then a daughter of the church, Pastor George Taylor's daughter, Rita, was there, and we had a wonderful, wonderful time. So thank you so much for the invite. Looking forward to next year. Then, of course, Sunday morning, Easter, I had six services. Can you believe it? Yes, six. It was crazy, but it was good, starting with Sunrise Service 1, Sunrise Service 2, and then my own service at 9:30, in which we not only celebrated Resurrection Day, but we ordained and appointed fellows in our congregation who serve faithfully. So congratulations to the new deacon, Steve Riley, to our new junior deacon, Makai Burrell, and to my Episcopal adjutant, Malay Burrell. It was a wonderful time. We had good food afterwards, and then we blessed 40 residents at a nursing home nearby with what we had left over. So it was a great weekend. Now today is April 1st, and some of us will call it April Fool's Day. Oh my, I hope you're not fooled in any way. What about you, Matt?
I hope nobody does, because I'll fall for it right away before I actually think, oh wait, it's April 1st. So my daughter, she already said she's going to trick our other son and stuff, but I think she might pull one over on me somehow.
Ah, daddy's girl. She got to be able to have a little fun.
Yeah, she got me wrapped around her finger anyway. So.
Get your shotgun ready.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And so, you know, when we think about April Fools, sometimes people think that it's something where you can do a whole lot of pranks. And some people do. It was instituted to really be a great universal prank day. So watch out for those who love you. Watch out for those who work with you. Watch out for those who are friends of yours who may be calling you with pranks. And understand that it's just a fun day. And we are excited because we have April showers for the first day of April. I hope you're traveling nicely and safely. And so we're going to continue to listen to this song as we wait for our first guest, and we'll be right back with you. is the one of my best songs. Ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no valley low enough. And that is a fine introduction to my first guest here on the Bishop Mary Show. That is one of the greatest hits of Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. And it still hits me even now today just to see the video or even hear them singing together. And so what an appropriate way for us to introduce again, here on the Bishop Mary Show, our state representative of the 181st District, State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta. And we are grateful that you got up early, sir, to come and talk to us this morning. Good morning.
Happy to do it. But, you know, listen, we always start early. I'm already in the car, okay? Like on, you know, getting moving, even on this rainy day. But blessed to see another one.
Absolutely. You headed to Harrisburg, I assume?
No, not to Harrisburg, to things around the district.
The district, and, okay. They still got y'all off. All right. I heard that the budget talks were talking, so I didn't know if you were headed that way for the budget talks, because I know that.
We were there last week and the week before last, and we'll be there next week.
All right. So you get a week off. Well, then this is good for those in the district to see you, touch you, talk to you, be with you, you know, kind of make you swag going through the 181st district. And I've learned it well, having been the EA to your predecessor, the great retired State Representative W. Curtis Thomas, who you succeeded when he retired. And I was joyful to serve with him for several years. In his legacy that continues, he was a hands-on guy. Everybody knew him. Yeah. Everybody could call him.
That's absolutely
right.
I
had never seen anyone quite like that in level of state representative. But after 30-some-plus years of service, we are grateful that he is enjoying retirement. And now you have been our state representative. I think this is your third run or your fourth run?
Yeah, this is my sixth year.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So okay. All right. Well then this is you're going into your fourth run. Well, we are grateful that you are there, and certainly would you mind telling those that are interested, because we know you are also running for your seat, what the 181st district covers, and what do you think you have done so well for the 181st since you've now taken the helm?
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And, you know, and as you said, you know, walked into this gig over a half decade ago at this point with some huge shoes to, I don't know if you kind of fill them, but try to at least walk in the sand that he sort of left before us, and so I'm grateful for him leaving those footprints that I can sort of try to fill. But let me just say, the 181st district post reapportionment, which happens every 10 years, where the legislature redraws the lines of the district, now includes Francisville, small parts of Callahill, small sections of Center City, Philadelphia, Old Kensington, North Central, North Philly, and a tiny, tiny, you know, bit of Sharswood, depending on where you draw that line. And so, you know, I'm just really grateful to be able to represent a district that looks like our city, that reflects our city, from an economic perspective, from a racial perspective, from an, you know, age perspective, and be able to represent a huge critical anchors in our district, from the school district of Philadelphia to the police headquarters to the you know, family court, all the way to the Met and the Blue Horizon Theater and Progress Plaza and Reverend Sullivan's, all of his dream along Broad Street, and so many other critical community anchors, Salvation Army, and many faith leaders all across the district. And so what we've tried to do in my time in office is prioritize the folks that my life and my faith teach us to prioritize, right? We need to focus on the least, the lost, and the last.
Come on, Sam.
And we've really tried to do just that. And I want to highlight a couple of things that we got done this session, because I think it's important for folks to recognize that we are in majority in the House of Representatives, majority of Democrats, for the first time in over a decade. And so we spent a lot of time in the wilderness trying to be in a position to advance an agenda, as opposed to being in a position of trying to block the worst things from happening. And for anybody who plays any sport, you know what it means to be on defense consistently. And even if you are blocking a lot of bad things, you want to be in a position of being on offense and advancing good things. And so, you know, I spent our time in the wilderness blocking efforts to try to overturn the right to vote, and being outspoken against folks who wanted to make it easier for folks to get weapons of war on our street, to push back against folks who wanted to disinvest even further from our schools and from our young people. And just in a little over a year, with one vote, we have moved the needle in a completely opposite, different direction. And let me give you a couple of really big examples. The first is, for the first time in 32 years, we expanded not only the award amount, but increased the income threshold for the rent and mortgage rebate program. This is a critical program that provides support and rebates to our seniors, to those who are caring for a loved one with disabilities or may have disabilities themselves. And so prior to a bill that I was a co-sponsor of that passed and was signed into law by the governor, the maximum that you could get back every year was $650. Now, don't get me wrong, that $650, heard from people all the time that they were using it to pay for medication or to supplement their mortgage or their rent, or to, you know, care of that repair that they've needed to take care of in their home. But we've now expanded that to up to $1,000 that you can get.
Wow.
While also increasing the amount of people who are eligible for the program in the first place by the tune of 250,000 more Pennsylvanians are now eligible in the first place.
Oh,
and so
gosh.
I start there because folks should, who are listening to your program, should reach out to my office or other state reps' offices, state senator's office, to see if they're now eligible, because maybe you weren't eligible in a previous year and you may be eligible this year. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I would highlight is what we did around education, where in the last budget, we invested over $1 billion, Archbishop, over $1 billion with a B, the largest single investment in K-12 education in Pennsylvania history. I was proud to be a part of that. We also increased the child independent tax credit. And so for folks who are filing their taxes, you have until April 21st. Don't get caught slipping, okay? you can't. But you might want to file after you hear what I have to say. If you have kids or you have an adult dependent, the federal government had a program, you file your taxes, you may be eligible. Now, what we used to do at the state is we would match that up to 30%. So we're just under a third, we would match it. And now what we've done this year is we have now done a 100% match. So we are now doing a full match with the federal government. So what does that mean for folks? That means that if you file taxes and you qualify for the child independent tax credit, you now will get triple the amount that you got last year for filing. You now get triple in this tax year because of what we did at the state level. And you don't have to file anything else, okay, to be clear. You will automatically, when you file your state taxes, if you previously qualified for your federal taxes, you will get triple the amount back to support all the different expenses that you know very well that you have. When you caring for a dependent loved one or you have a child and then you have to pay for childcare or, for adult day services, all these different things that can be a real expense. And then the final thing I want to say is a bill of mine just passed where are we at on Monday? On last Wednesday, HB 777. Now, this bill would prohibit the sale of what are known as ghost guns. And ghost guns are these unserialized guns. And so if you had a weapon prior to the explosion of ghost guns, gun manufacturers put a serial number on the gun. And so if that gun was used in a crime, it had a signature. Okay. And so law enforcement and others could say, this bullet was fired from this gun, and we know the number of the gun, and we can go back and identify a chain of custody. Who sold this gun? Who had the gun before? How did it get into the hand of the 15 or 14 year old? And a part of what, you know, I know you know all too well about, and so many listeners, that we had a crisis and still do to certain respects of people who are buying guns legally and then giving those guns to someone who is not allowed to have them and then getting a profit, a process that's called straw purchasing, where you stand in the gap and buy a gun for somebody who should not have a gun, and that person goes out and commits a crime. Now people can avoid that process altogether. Now you can just get a credit card, go online, and buy a gun-making kit, okay? And all it requires is two screws, effectively, to put together your own gun. And what's so dangerous about this is you don't need a background check. You don't need to verify your age. And so what we're finding is that a lot of young people have gotten aware of this and are stealing parents' credit cards. And so check your credit
card. Oh, boy.
Stealing parents' credit cards or stealing others' credit cards and then fraudulently purchasing these kits, putting these kits together, using these weapons. And then law enforcement has a tough time trying to identify where those guns came from because they are not serialized. And so we closed that loophole here in Pennsylvania with our legislation. It passed with bipartisan support, Republican support, and we hope that the Senate will take this bill up.
Wow. Wow. That, I'm happy to hear about the ghost gun bill. And you're true. There's been a statement by one of your colleagues who, and even in the city council now, what happens when the killer lives with you. And it's putting onus on the parents to really check not just your credit cards, but your home, their rooms, hiding places. Because I think in our last mass shooting, a father was completely amazed at the fact that one of the weapons used in the shootout was in his home, in his son's room, when the marshals came to arrest him. And I'm sure that it is shocking for anybody and everybody who doesn't want to believe that their children are part of something so heinous. But the reality is, when I came through, my room was not my room. Let me be clear. I didn't have a room in my parents' room. I was allowed a space to sleep and keep some of my stuff. But it wasn't mine. My mother would tell me, anything under this roof is mine. So there wasn't no such thing as I'm going to my room. What? Your room. And scared to death to bring anything in there. I couldn't account for it, too, because death came creeping in the room in the midnight hour. So that's a whole nother time now where there was a lot of independence and allowing of privacy that now may make you responsible and accountable. And I know one mother right now where daughter was involved in something and the family of the victim is suing her. That speaks a lot. It's sad because if there's any kind of criminality or a law that's passed that makes parents accountable, or aiding and abetting, particularly when law enforcement wants you, you're not going to win that. That's the first thing, particularly mm-hmm. when the marshals get involved. So now you're not dealing with the state, you're dealing with the federal level. And I just hate to see that more families end up being a product of something that's that you just need to have your child accountable for. And I still believe that when you throw yourself on the mercy of the court, sometimes there's a blessing in it. But I was very sad about the last young man who decided to flee the state, you know, eventually got caught 3 days later. And we don't know what the law enforcement aspect is going to be, but sometimes people just don't make wise decisions, and there are consequences to that. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy to hear about this ghost gun law. I was unaware of it, but I'm glad you told me, and I certainly will be sharing that information with my circle and my network so that people, grandparents, aunties, uncles, legal guardians, and all can really take the accountability of checking your statements, finding out what they're doing, looking and being a viable part of society to help decrease the incidents that could mm-hmm. often and ultimately cost you. So thank you for that. I didn't mean to go into all of that, but it was just as
I just want to say briefly, you know, and I would really encourage folks to reach out to their state senators mm-hmm. to ensure that their state senator not only supports this bill, but is going to speak up in the Senate on the need to pass this bill. Because as you heard me say, I mentioned a word that is become far too rare in politics. And I said bipartisan. This bill passed with bipartisan support. And so there are Republicans and Democrats who came together to get this done. And, you know, we need the Senate, which is still controlled by Republicans, you know, to act and to move the needle in the right direction. So I just wanted to underscore, you know, that point.
Thank you so much. We also know that you are now seeking another office on the state run, and you are a Democratic candidate for the office of Auditor General. And when I said to several yes. of my congregants, what's an Auditor General? One person said, oh, all they do is care about money. I said, that's a good way to kind of look at it. The other people said, what is that? They know Attorney General. They're not sure of an yeah. Auditor General. So could That's you give right. us a brief description of what the Auditor General does and why you're seeking that seat while yet being still serving for your district?
So let me start with the end of your question and work my way backwards. You know, one of the things you recognize if you get into this for the reason I did, I grew up in a working poor family in North Philly, as you know well. You knew my mama.
yes, indeed.
I benefited certainly from Teen Haven, okay, oh, helping give me a great grounding.
My daddy,
and
Lord have
scripture
mercy.
And everything else.
Yes,
that's right. That's right. So you know very well. But we, like a lot of kids who are part of Teen Haven, we needed that support because life was not a crystal stair. You know, my parents separated when I was still very young. We found ourselves in a situation where all those services that you helped provide, helped us get the applications, fill them out, get them in, for LIHEAP or for food stamps or for the rent rebate. These were all programs that we really depended on. And for a lot of people listening to Talk 860 right now, you may know a little something about that. You might be going to a gig that is not sufficient in terms of matching up with all of the expenses that you have. And so you find yourself with gaps. And when I mentioned what my goal has been in Harrisburg to focus on the least, the lost, and the last, I'm, you know, grateful to be a part of a political party that has not been without its faults. But if you think about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, a lot of the benefits that help create a social safety net, these are things that Democrats have fought for over the years. And when I talk about these programs working or not working, I think a lot of your listeners, and certainly I understand, that this is not hypothetical. It's not an academic exercise. It is a real thing in real people's lives, whether or not you can afford the Similac to feed your infant, or you can, you know, get to the grocery aisle and not have to put everything back when you're in the line because somebody supported you and cared about you. And that's ultimately what community is all about, us caring about and supporting each other. And that has been my mission in Harrisburg. Now, the job of the Auditor General takes what I'm doing now and goes a step further. And I would say to folks, you know, you don't quit your job because you're asking for more responsibility. You show up every day to work, you work your heart out, and you hope that people look at the work that you've done and match it up to what other tools are available and say, hey, you've been faithful in the small things. Let me give you a little bit more opportunity to do even more. And so I'm going to, you know, wait on voters to make a decision about whether or not they want me to do more. And there's a lot more to do. But before I go into the specifics of the Auditor General's office, I want to make this final point. Every elected position is just a tool. I had a mentor who said this to me. Office is just a tool. It's not an end in of itself. The question is, what do you want to build? And what I believe we should build are communities where more people feel stable and less insecure, as a lot of families feel right now, where one car repair or roof leak or sickness in the family could upend your entire life if you don't have the basics to make sure you're okay and that you have a strong foundation. And so the job of the Auditor General is partially about the money, a big part of it about the money. But it's about saying this very simply. We all invest into a pot of resources, right? Called our tax dollars. We invest into a pot. And then you elect legislators who then go and say, hey, we're going to take out of that pot resources to pay for government services, to pay for roads, for bridges, to pay for schools, to pay for all these programs that I mentioned. And then you have the Auditor General who says, okay, well, let me do two things. Let me first make sure nobody's taken anything off of the top of that pot of money, that nobody's inadvertently or intentionally taking advantage of this big pot of money and trying to fill their own pockets as opposed to investing those dollars back into things that we all benefit from. But then the Auditor General, and a good Auditor General, has to ask the second question. What are we doing with those dollars that we are putting out? How are those dollars actually resulting in a public policy outcome that's making people's lives better? And so that's why the Auditor General is the elected state watchdog, and it is the public advocate. It is the person who's watching out for you in government, watching out for your money, but additionally making sure that the investments that we all make collectively, that those are giving us a bang for our buck, that we're getting an actual return on the investment that we're making with limited amounts of resources. And so you need somebody who shows that, A, they have an independence and a fearlessness. And I think anybody who's seen me in Harrisburg know that if I'm one thing, you can say, I'm not afraid. I ain't scared. To be very clear. I'm not.
I know that's right.
The other thing that folks will see is that I'm never afraid to speak up when people are trying to do the wrong thing. And so those are the core, you know, jobs of the Auditor General. And you work as a project manager to lay out a vision. You got to write the vision. You got to make it plain, lay out a vision, and then identify a strong team of people to help you execute one of only four statewide elected positions that we have. So it's a big, big responsibility. And in 22 days, if the creek don't rise, as the saints say, I'll be the Democratic nominee, and we will be running against a Republican Tim DeFore, who, you know, is an election denier and who has not utilized this role, which is why most of your congregation said, what is the Auditor General? Who is the Auditor General?
Well, I'll give you one question as we wrap up our interview time. One of the persons says, is the Auditor General for the state similar to the city controller for Philadelphia?
Similar, but not as tied down.
Okay.
Each controller, I'll just give you an example. This controller in Philadelphia, their powers, duties, and responsibilities are outlined in the city charter. The controller in Erie, for example, has a much different scope of authorities and responsibilities. I think the thing that's most analogous is if folks go and look, everybody knows at this point, Attorney General Letitia James from New York City. I think everybody knows her at this point. You should look at the job that she had before. I would encourage folks to go Google the New York City Public Advocate, the New York City Public Advocate. Those jobs are exactly the same.
Okay.
You're watching the money and then you're making sure that money resulted in some programs that we can be proud of. So listen, Archbishop, I'm always grateful for the opportunity to come be with you, this incredible platform that you've built over the years, and share, you know, what is happening, because there's so much going on. And I would say that more than ever, we need each other. We need each other.
Absolutely. For those that may want to follow you for your reelection to the 181st and or you announced as a candidate for Auditor General, how would they make contact with you?
So just my name on everything. So MalcolmKenyatta.com. That's two L's in Malcolm. Okay. And then the same is true on all social media networks. You can follow our campaign. But thank you. This is an incredible way to start the day. And there's no better way to start the day than with Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. I don't know how it gets better than that. And Archbishop Mary.
Well, thank you for throwing me in there. Of course, I will follow Marvin and Tammy at any time. The greatest of all times. Right. I'm certainly wishing you the best. And either way, we're looking forward to you serving. So continue to be the great person that you are. And I thank you, Representative, for getting up early to be with me and my people. And we're hoping to hear from you post-primary. As we go into the general election, I know you're very active with the presidential campaign, and I would love for you to come back and speak from a bird's eye view of what it is we need to do to be able to make success for who we would like to generally, according to the statistics, have repeat their term. So I thank you so much. Appreciate you. Love you now. You take care. God bless
take
you.
Care.
So long. And we're going to go immediately now to our Sports Minute, our 90-second Sports Minute with the one and the only Sports Talk Terry. Good morning. Good morning. I thought, Mr. Terry.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Oh, there
How
he is.
Are you?
Hey, okay.
So after a busy offseason for the Eagles, one of the final offseason moves was that they traded Temple standout Hassan Reddick, who led the team in sacks over the last 2 years, to the New York Jets for a conditional pick in 2026. A lot of folks are disappointed in this move because of the fact that they felt they lost a huge defensive player and only got something that'll help them in the future versus helping them now. We'll kind of have to wait and see how that plays out. The Philadelphia Phillies kicked off their season this weekend, dropping the first 2 of 3 to the Atlanta Braves, who've won the division the last few years. They were able to salvage a win last night and start series this week versus the Cincinnati Reds, as well as the Washington Nationals. And the Philadelphia Flyers are going to backdoor their way into the playoffs. They have about a 58% chance of making the playoffs right now. They'll come in somewhere between the 7th and 8th seed. So they will see postseason action with this nice core and revamped roster. So we're excited to see how they're going to shake out. And lastly, the NCAA Final Four. Though there were no local teams that made it, it's been a pretty exciting Final Four run this year. We have NC State, Purdue, and UConn as the teams that are kind of headlining, as well as Alabama in the men's bracket. And then the women's bracket, the highly talked about Caitlin Clark as well as Angel Reese will go head-to-head to determine who's going to come out of the women's bracket. South Carolina is the favorite to win it all. So a lot of stuff there. Obviously, Dawn Staley with the local ties and connection, multi-time national champion. So people are excited to see what she's going to do if she can win yet another title. That wraps up the Sports Talk Minute. Talk to you guys next week.
All right. Thank you so much. We are grateful to have Sports Talk Terry here weekly, giving us highlight on sports, including Philly. And we're looking forward to that. Thank you so much. And we're now going to be ready for our next interview with a wonderful young man right after this message.
Hundreds of shooting incidents and multiple victims. homicides that were senseless, cold, intentional, killing our men, women, and children in the African American communities. The question is, am I my brother or sister's keeper? Have we considered each other as neighbors? We can wait for someone to come in and save us, or we can save ourselves. The violence must end. Do your part.
Lord, if I find favor in your sight, Lord, please hear my heart's cry, 'cause I'm desperately waiting to be where you are. So I'll cross the
Wow, what a beautiful, beautiful song, and a way for us to introduce my next guest, our State Representative Anthony Bellman, who represents the 203rd District. I don't see you, but I hope you can hear me. Good morning.
Yeah, I'm here. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Okay. I'm sorry so much. Our Facebook fans, I wanted to let you know he is on the line. And we don't see him, but we at least can hear him. And hopefully we'll be able to see him so he can put a face to the name. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Archbishop. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you so much for meeting up with me this morning. So you represent the 203rd District. Would you mind telling us, because of the reapportionment, what areas of the state of the city do you cover in particular?
Yeah, so my district is entirely in the city of Philadelphia and encompasses Alleny, Longcrest, Lawndale, Oxford Circle, Burr Home. So the lower Northeast Philadelphia along with Alleny.
Okay, Longcrest. Okay, great. And in your population that you do have there, is there a diverse group? Is it heavy African-American? What are the demographics of the district you represent?
Well, the demographics it's a very diverse district. There's about 40% population of African Americans in the district, but also about 38.8% of my constituents speak a language other than English. Wow. And this language can, it runs the kind of the gambit. It's a very diverse, it's kind of like the United Nations. So we have people who speak French and Creole, Spanish. There's also Asian languages here and Middle Eastern as well. So we have a little bit of everybody in the 203rd Legislative District.
Wow, isn't that wonderful to see that our city is represented across the board? This is your going into your second term.
I'm about a year and a half, into almost a year and a half, about a year and three months now, 4 months since we're at April 1st, into my first term. So obviously state reps, we run every 2 years, and I'm currently running right now as well. So yeah, this is
busy
we're
time.
About a year and a half into
yes.
my first term.
And how has it been for you? People would say you're a newbie. to the state representative, but I would have to tell them, you're not a newbie to the political scene at all. So would you mind introducing yourself and certainly incorporating your background in that conversation?
Yeah, and I'll start earlier when we actually met, Archbishop, when I was teaching and I was a dean of students at Paul Robeson Charter School out in Trenton, New Jersey.
Oh, my God.
So that was, that was, you know,
you see the gray?
Almost 10 years ago. Right. When I had just graduated college, and I remember.
And you were such a young guy. When I heard you were the dean, I said, are you kidding me? He's the dean?
Yes, yes. And I got in that position and I was doing well, and just really wanting to change young people's lives and being a positive role model for young people as well. Was always a dream of mine, and I got to do that in education. In about 2015, I stopped my stint in education and I started working for Congressman Brendan Boyle in his district office in my home neighborhood of Alleyne, where it was my job just to help anybody who walked in the office. There I served as his immigration specialist, helping people who wanted to come to the United States and bring their family members over to the United States and helping them navigate the USCIS process, along with any other thing that people needed help with in my neighborhood. So sometimes I was dealing with potholes and sometimes I was dealing with the Department of State. It's really where I got my chops in politics. I served in a few roles with the congressman, serving as his community relations liaison, his political director on the political side, but also ultimately serving as a senior advisor on Capitol Hill, where I worked down in Washington, D.C., on a whole host of issues, but also being able to come back to my neighborhood and still do community work as well. So that was the trade-off when I went to D.C. It was, yes, I had to go back and forth. So when we're in session, I'm in Washington, D.C., and when we're out of session, I'm back at home. And I didn't know everything was preparing me for this job as state representative. So I'm doing the same thing. When we're in session, I'm in Harrisburg. And when we're out of session, I'm back in Philly doing the work of the people of 203rd Legislative District.
That is fabulous. And most people would say, because you're so young, they wouldn't believe that you've had such a storied political background. But I'm so grateful for you. In this term that you have served, what have been your agenda items and how are you trying to make them a reality for your citizenry?
Yeah, well, when I started knocking on doors and going around in my community, the number one agenda item that everybody was talking about was public safety, mm-hmm. And making sure that we had a way to get young people out of a life of crime, those who are seeking to go that route, but to make sure that people are safe. And since then, when I started in the State House, I was appointed as co-chair of something called the PA Safe Caucus, which is a group of legislators who are committed to ending gun violence, but also to expanding mental health resources around the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And not too long ago, I was standing with the Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis, calling for the governor's proposal of $100 million to be allocated towards gun violence prevention and intervention programs to be a priority in this year's budget. So we have been working since I got in the State House. Last week, actually, we just passed a law out of the Pennsylvania House, and hopefully our friends in the Senate will take it up, to ban ghost guns in Pennsylvania. And for people who don't know, ghost guns are weapons, are firearms that are not traceable. They don't have a serial number, and you can actually make a 3D weapon at home. So we are taking actual steps in the Pennsylvania House to ban ghost guns. We've taken actual steps to really focus our budget, the Pennsylvania budget, on making sure that we're ending gun violence in Pennsylvania. And I'm proud of those things, even though I'm a year and 3 months in. I'm very proud of the work that we've been able to accomplish in the Pennsylvania House.
That's great. Your prior interviewee, State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta mentioned HB 777, was telling us to please make sure we get in touch with our senators and ensure that they will support it. It was bipartisan support in the House, and they would like the same in the Senate. The good thing is that we are majority in the House. However, might be a little tougher with the Senate, but maybe if those of us who care about what's happening, particularly with gun violence, we'll just do our part either by calling, leaving a message, or sending some kind of a note saying that we would like them to consider that bill in particular. The ghost guns are a concern. Given that you are in the lower Northeast in that area, how did the mass shooting at Northeast High School impact you in particular and those of those that are in your district?
Yeah, so actually that shooting took place. It didn't take place exactly at Northeast High School. It took place at Five Points, which is at Rising Sun and Cottman. And my office is about a block away from where that shooting took place. So it was a very a scary time, I would say, probably for everybody in the neighborhood. My office had to go on a lockdown. One thing I did learn about as a dean, unfortunately, is that you have to prepare for these unfortunate incidents that occur. We prepare for it all the time in education, making sure that students and young people are know what to do should an active shooter appear in the school. And unfortunately, we had to do the same thing in my office where, you know, I told all of my staff to close the doors and making sure that, you know, you're getting to a safe spot in the office because we don't know what was happening. I immediately called the captain of the second district at the time, Captain Metellus, and asked him what was going on. And he assured me that the scene was secure and that our office can operate as normal. But at the time when he told me, he said that it was five young people that were shot. And a little bit later, we were able to see that it was actually eight young people. So this is something that was, you know, we experienced in real time. But also, I would just have to commend, you know, the community of Lower Northeast and the community of Philadelphia. There were people that ran to the young people's aid, that went out there and put, you know, straps over them to stop the bleeding and just to make sure that they were out there comforting people. So I really do commend everybody for doing those things. And it's something that we experience here and our constituents are really upset about, but we are getting through as a community.
I also want to commend the U.S. Marshals, the Philadelphia Police Department, and anyone else that helped to secure the apprehension of the young persons. I guess my heart breaks that they're so young, and that, as a grandma said, their life is over because of the multitude of shootings and the eight counts plus all of the kinds of things for them. And I'm certain for you, having been in the education system and now in the political system, you've had a little bit of a bird's eye view of knowing how to understand why the young people are reacting the way they are. And as a dean of culture and a Black man who was an educator, what else is it that we can do to help them with conflict resolution other than them doing these horrific scenes and really believing they're going to get away with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an awesome question. And with all of my experience in education, the first bill that I actually passed out of the Pennsylvania House was a bill that dealt with conflict resolution and making sure that we implemented conflict resolution teaching in schools all across the Commonwealth. I just think right now there are young people that don't know how to regulate their own emotions, but also need that instruction on how to do so and how to resolve conflict without using violence. I think that if this bill is able to pass, and once again, we pass it out of the House and we're waiting on it in the Senate, but if we are able to get this bill to the governor's desk, I think that we would be able to really teach young people the do's and don'ts about, you know, you might get angry. things happen that you might not expect. But picking up a weapon and getting into a fight is not the answer. There's ways to de-escalate situations so that way it does not get to a point where you feel like you have to harm somebody else and just in order to get your point across. So this was something that I've dealt with in the practical world when I was a dean, and it dealt with a lot of conflict resolution, making sure that young people can come to the table. What is the issue? What's the problem? And how can we come to a solution? And even if the solution is we don't need to sit next to each other in the lunchroom, then let that be the solution. So that way we're not getting into a place where violence is the answer. So this is something that I think we can do legislatively. But I also think that we need to, as a community, just really make sure that every single young person has something productive to do after school and during the summertime. I think we are dealing in a situation where our young people are too idle, that they're getting themselves into situations that lead to destruction. And we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. So if I had in a perfect world, and what we're trying to do here in the 203rd Legislative District is just to make sure that our principals are sharing information and contacting us and making sure that their young people in every school that they're dealing with have actual programs in place. What can we do to get these young people, if they're in high school and able to work, what can we do to get them into a job? And what are we doing to make sure that our young people in elementary school and middle school, too, are doing something productive with their time and outside of school hours?
Absolutely. So someone sent me a question, and this was their statement. In 30 seconds or less, could you tell me why I should vote for you to return and continue as our representative in the 203rd? I like the way that was said.
No, I'll say this. I'm in my state office right now, so we can't do too much of a commercial as to why we want to vote for me. But I'll just say, I think the work that we've been doing in the Pennsylvania House is crucial to making sure that every single working family in the Pennsylvania House and in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is benefiting. We've passed the child tax credit in the Pennsylvania House, and to make sure that working families can actually get money back should they have children and they're in a certain income bracket. But we're also making sure that every single Pennsylvania is safe based on the laws that I told you that we've already passed. So we've been working for families in the Pennsylvania House, and I'm proud of the work that we've done. And also here in the 203rd Legislative District, we've just been making sure in my first year that it's been a priority that we are meeting every constituent at their needs. And we've been having events all around the district, making sure, because every time when I got into office, I just wanted to make sure that people didn't think, oh, well, he was going to be the state rep for Alleyne or he was going to be the state rep for the Northeast. No, we want to make sure that we're taking care of everybody in the 203rd district. And those are the things that have been a priority for me in my office.
Absolutely. And so for those of you that may want more information, you certainly can Google the information to try and reach out to his campaign. If you need additional information, I'm sure it's related to Anthony Bellman, and you will be able to get that, because we certainly don't want him to get in any trouble using the C word, amen, while working. So, if I remember nothing else, having been an EA to W. Curtis Thomas, can't use the C word. Amen. So we certainly are thankful for you today. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Bishop Mary Show. We're hoping you'll be able to come back, and in a few weeks we'll have an outcome, and then we'll be able to see what other things we can support you in. I appreciate your time so much, Representative. Thank you for being on our show today. And for those of you that are listening, you got to know that if you can't be good, be careful. If you can't be careful, baby, don't do it. It really may not be worth it. Please enjoy April 1st and don't get pranked on April Fool's Day. Enjoy this day and be well and be happy and be safe. All right. Until next week, I'll look to see you then. God bless you. Already.
Thanks for tuning in to another dynamic show with Bishop Mary. To contact Bishop Mary, call 833-722-4748. That's 833-722-4748. And she'll get right back to you. Remember, let the healing begin with you. See you next week for another great time together on the Bishop Mary Show.